Agnes's hair snagged in the twigs. She managed to get one boot on a branch while holding on for dear life to the branch above, but that left her other foot standing on the broomstick, which was beginning to drift sideways and causing her to do what even ballerinas can't do without some training. "Can you see it yet?" Nanny cried from far too far below.
"I think this is an old nest as well. Oh, no.
What's happened?"
"I think my drawers have split."
"I always go for roomy myself," said Nanny. Agnes got the other leg onto the branch, which creaked. "Lump," said Perdita. "I could have climbed this like a gazelle."
"Gazelles don't climb," said Agnes.
"What's that?" said a voice from below.
"Oh, nothing."
Agnes inched her way along, and suddenly her vision was full of black and white wings. A magpie landed on a twig a foot from her face and screamed at her. Five others swooped in from the other trees and joined in the chorus. She didn't like birds in any case. They were fine when they were flying, and their songs were nice. But close to, they were mad little balls of needles with the intelligence of a housefly. She tried to swat the nearest one, and it fluttered onto a higher branch while she struggled to get her balance back. When the branch stopped rocking, she moved further along, gingerly, trying to ignore the enraged birds, and looked at the nest. It was hard to tell if it was the remains of an old one or the start of a new one, but it did contain a piece of tinsel, a shard of broken glass, and gleaming, even under this sullen sky, something white with a gleaming edge.
5 for silver, 6 for gold, she said half to herself.
"It's 5 for heaven, 6 for hell, Nanny called up. "I can just reach it anyway." The bough broke. There were plenty of others below it, but they merely served as points of interest on the way down. The last one flipped Agnes into a holly bush. Nanny took the invitation from her outflung hand. Rain had made the ink run, but the word weatherwax was still very readable. She scratched at the gold edging with her thumb. "Too much gold," she said. "Well, that explains the invite. I told you them birds will steal anything that glitters."
"I'm not hurt at all," said Agnes pointedly. "The holly quite cushioned my fall."
"I'll wring their necks," said Nanny. The magpies in the trees around the cottage screamed at her.
"I think I may have dislocated my hat, however," said Agnes, pulling herself to her feet.
But it was useless angling for sympathy in a puddle, so she gave up. "All right, we found the invitation. It was all a terrible mistake. No one's fault. Now, let's find Granny."
"Not if she don't want to be found," said Nanny, rubbing the edge of the card thoughtfully.
"You can do borrowing. Even if she left early, some creatures will have seen her."
"I don't borrow, as a rule," said Nanny firmly. "I ain't got Esme's self-discipline. I gets involved. I was a rabbit for 3 whole days until our Jason went and fetched Esme, and she brought me back. Much longer, and there wouldn't have been a me to come back."
"Rabbits sound dull."
"Oh, they have their ups and downs."
"All right, then, have a look in the boy's glass ball," said Agnes. "You're good at that. Magrat told me."
Across the clearing, a crumbling brick fell out of the cottage's chimney.
"Not here, then," said Nanny, with some reluctance. "It's given me the willies."
"Oh, no, as if we didn't have enough. What's he doing here?" Mightily Oates was advancing through the wood. He walked awkwardly, as city people do when traversing real rutted, leaf-mouldy, twig-strewn soil, and had the concerned look of someone who was expecting to be attacked at any moment by owls, or beetles. In his strange black-and-white clothing, he looked like a human magpie himself. The magpies screamed from the trees.
7 for a secret never to be told, said Agnes.
7's a devil in his own self, said Nanny darkly. You've got your rhyme. I've got mine.
When Oates saw the witches, he brightened up very slightly and blew his nose at them.
What a waste of skin, muttered Nanny. Ah, Mrs. Ogg and Miss Knit, said Oates, inching around some mud. I trust I find you well.
Up till now, said Nanny. I had, hoped to see Mrs. Weatherwax.
For a moment, the only sound was the chattering of the ravens.
Hoped, said Agnes.
Mrs. Weatherwax, said Nanny. Yes, it is part of my... I heard she might be ill, and visiting the elderly and infirm is
part of our pastoral duties. Of course, I realise that technically we have no pastoral duties, but still, while I'm here... Nanny's face was a picture, possibly one painted by an artist with a very strange sense of humour.
"Oh, I'm really sorry she ain't here," she said,
and Agnes knew she was being altogether honest and absolutely nasty.
"Oh, dear, I was, going to give her... I was going... Is she well, then?"
"I'm sure she'd be all the better for a visit from you," said Nanny, and once again there was a strange, curvy sort of truth to this. "It'd be the sort of thing she'd talk about for days. You can come back any time you want."
Oates looked helpless.
"Then I suppose I'd better, be getting back to my, tent," he said. "May I accompany you ladies down to the town? There are, some dangerous things in the woods."
"We got broomsticks," said Nanny firmly.
The priest looked crestfallen, and Agnes made a decision.
"A broomstick," she said. "I'll walk you. I mean, you can walk me back if you like."
The priest looked relieved. Nanny sniffed. There was a certain weatherwax quality to the sniff.
"Back at my place, then, and no dilly-dallying," she said.
"I don't dilly-dally," said Agnes.
"Just see you don't start," said Nanny, and went to find her broomstick.
Agnes and the priest walked in embarrassed silence for a while. At last Agnes said,
"How's the headache?" "Oh, much better, thank you. It went away. But Her Majesty was kind enough to give me some pills, anyway."
"That's nice," said Agnes.
"She ought to have given him a needle. Look at the size of that boil," said Perdita, one of nature's born squeezers. "Why doesn't he do something about it?"
"You don't like me very much, do you?" said Oates.
"I've hardly met you." She was becoming aware of an embarrassing draftiness in the nether regions.
A lot of people don't like me as soon as they've met me," said Oates.
"I suppose that saves time," said Agnes, and cursed.
Perdita had got through on that one, but Oates didn't seem to have noticed. He sighed.
"I'm afraid I have a bit of difficulty with people," he went on. "I fear I'm just not cut out for pastoral work."
"Don't get involved with this twerp," said Perdita.
But Agnes said, "You mean sheep and so on?"
"It all seemed a lot clearer at college," said Oates,
who, like many people, seldom paid much attention to what others said when he was unrolling his miseries.
"But here, when I tell people some of the more accessible stories from the Book of Om, they say things like, 'That's not right. Mushrooms wouldn't grow in the desert,' or 'That's a stupid way to run a vineyard.' Everyone here is so very literal."
Oates coughed. There seemed to be something preying on his mind.
Unfortunately, the old Book of Om is rather unyielding on the subject of witches," he said.
"Really?"
"Although, having studied the passage in question in the original Second Omnian Fourth text, I have advanced the rather daring theory that the actual word in question translates more accurately as cockroaches."
"Yes,
especially since it goes on to say that they can be killed by fire or in traps of treacle. It also says later on that they bring lascivious dreams."
"Don't look at me," said Agnes. "All you're getting is a walk home."
To her amazement and Perdita's crowing delight, he blushed as red as she ever did.
The word in question in that passage might just as easily be read in context as boiled lobsters," he said hurriedly.
"Nanny Ogg says Omnians used to burn witches," said Agnes.
"We used to burn practically everybody," said Oates gloomily, "although some witches did get pushed into big barrels of treacle, I believe."
He had a boring voice, too. He did appear, she had to admit, to be a boring person. It was almost too perfect a presentation, as if he was trying to make himself seem boring. But one thing had piqued Agnes's curiosity.
"Why did you come to visit Granny Weatherwax?"
"Well, everyone speaks very, highly of her,"
said Oates, suddenly picking his words like a man pulling plums from a boiling pot. "And they said she hadn't turned up last night, which was very strange, and I thought it must be hard for an old lady living, by herself, and—"
"Yes?"
"Well, I understand she's quite old, and it's never too late to consider the state of your immortal soul," said Oates.
"Which she must have, of course."
Agnes gave him a sideways look.
"She's never mentioned it," she said.
"You probably think I'm foolish."
"I just think you are an amazingly lucky man, Mr. Oates."
On the other hand, here was someone who'd been told about Granny Weatherwax, and had still walked through these woods that scared him stiff to see her, even though she was possibly a cockroach or a boiled lobster. No one in Lancre ever came to see Granny unless they wanted something. Oh, sometimes they came with little presents, because one day they'd want something again. But they generally made sure she was out first. There was more to Mr. Oates than met the eye. There had to be. A couple of centaurs burst out of the bushes ahead of them and cantered away down the path. Oates grabbed a tree.
"They were running around when I came up," he said. "Are they usual?"
"I've never seen them before," said Agnes. "I think they're from Uberwald."
"And the horrible little blue goblins? One of them made a very unpleasant gesture at me."
"Don't know about them at all."
"And the vampires? I mean, I knew that things were different here, but, really?"
"Vampires?" shouted Agnes. "You saw the vampires last night?"
"Well, I mean, yes. I studied them at length at the seminary, but I never thought I'd see them standing around talking about drinking blood and things. Really, I'm surprised the king allows it."
"And they didn't affect your mind?"
"I did have the terrible migraine."
"Does that count? I thought it was the prawns." A cry rang through the woods. It seemed to have many components, but mostly it sounded as though a turkey was being throttled at the other end of a tin tube.
"Oh, and what the heck was that?" shouted Oates.
Agnes looked around, bewildered. She'd grown up in the Lancre woods. Oh, you got strange things sometimes passing through, but generally they contained nothing more dangerous than other people. Now, in this tarnished light, even the trees were starting to look suspicious.
"Let's at least get down to Badass," she said, tugging at Oates's hand.
"You what?"
Agnes sighed.
"It's the nearest village."
"Bad ass?"
"Look, there was a donkey and it stopped in the middle of the river and it wouldn't go backwards or forwards," said Agnes, as patiently as possible.
Lancre people got used to explaining this.
"Bad ass, see? Yes, I know that disobedient donkey might have been more acceptable, but..."
The horrible cry echoed around the woods again. Agnes thought of all the things that were rumoured to be in the mountains, and dragged Oates after her like a badly hitched cart. Then the sound was right in front of them, and at a turn in the lane a head emerged from a bush. Agnes had seen pictures of an ostrich. So, start with one of them, but make the head and neck in violent yellow and give the head a huge ruff of red and purple feathers, and two big round eyes, the pupils of which jiggled drunkenly as the head moved back and forth.
"Is that some sort of local chicken?"
warbled Oates.
"I doubt it," said Agnes.
One of the long feathers had a tartan pattern. The cry started again, but was strangled halfway through when Agnes stepped forward, grabbing the thing's neck and pulled. A figure rose from the undergrowth, dragged up by his arm.
"Hodges Og?"
he quacked at her.
"Take that thing out of your mouth," said Agnes. "You sound like Mr. Punch."
He removed the whistle.
"Sorry, Miss Nit." "Hodges Og, why, and I realise I might not like the answer, why are you hiding in the woods with your arm dressed up like Hetty the Hen and making horrible noises through a tube?"
"Trying to lure the phoenix, miss."
"The phoenix? That's a mythical bird, Hodges Og."
"That's right, miss. There's one in Larker, miss. It's very young, miss, so I thought I might be able to attract it."
She looked at the brightly coloured glove.
"Oh, yes. If you raised chicks, you had to let them know what kind of bird they were, so you used a sort of glove puppet, but..."
"Hodges Og?"
"Yes, miss."
"I'm not an expert, of course, but I seem to recall that according to the commonly accepted legend of the phoenix, it would never see its parent. You can only have one phoenix at a time. It's automatically an orphan, you see."
"May I add something?" said Oates.
Miss Knit is right, I have to say. The phoenix builds a nest and bursts into flames, and the new bird arises from the ashes. I've read that. Anyway, it's an allegory.
Hodges Arg looked at the puppet phoenix on his arm and then looked bashfully at his feet.
Sorry about that, miss.
So, you see, a phoenix can never see another phoenix, said Agnes.
Wouldn't know about that, miss, said Hodges Arg, still staring at his boots.
An idea struck Agnes. Hodges Arg was always out of doors.
Hodges Arg?
Yes, miss.
Have you been out in the woods all morning?
Oh, yes, miss.
Have you seen Granny Weatherwax?
Yes, miss.
You have?
Yes, miss.
Where?
Up in the woods over towards the border, miss. At first light, miss.
Why didn't you tell me?
Did you want to know, miss?
Oh, yes, sorry. What were you doing up there?
Hodges Arg blew a couple of quacks on his phoenix lure by way of explanation. Agnes grabbed the priest again.
Come on, let's get to the road and find Nanny.
Hodges Arg was left with his glove puppet and his lure and his knapsack and a deeply awkward feeling. He'd been brought up to respect witches, and Miss Knit was a witch. The man with her hadn't been a witch, but his manner fitted him into that class of people Hodges Arg mentally pigeonholed as my betters, although in truth this was quite a large category. He wasn't about to disagree with his betters. Hodges Arg was a one-man feudal system. On the other hand, he thought, as he packed up and prepared to move on, books that were all about the world tended to be written by people who knew all about books rather than all about the world. All that stuff about birds hatching from ashes must have been written by someone who didn't know anything about birds. As for there only ever being one phoenix, well, that had obviously been written down by a man who ought to get out in the fresh air more and meet some ladies. Birds came from eggs. Oh, the phoenix was one of those creatures that had learned to use magic, had built it right into its very existence. But magic was tricky stuff, and nothing used any more of it than it needed to. So there'd be an egg, definitely. And eggs needed warmth, didn't they? Hodges Arg had been thinking about this a lot during the morning, as he tramped through damp bushes, making the acquaintance of several disappointed ducks. He'd never bothered much about history, except the history of falconry, but he did know that there were once places, and in some cases still were, with a very high level of background magic, which made them rather exciting and not a good place to raise your young. Maybe the phoenix, whatever it really looked like, was simply a bird who'd worked out a way of making incubation work very, very fast. Hodges Arg had actually got quite a long way, and if he'd had a bit more time, he'd have worked out the next step, too. It was well after noon before Granny Weatherwax came off the moor, and a watcher might have wondered why it took such a long time to cross a little patch of moorland. They'd have wondered even more about the little stream. It had cut a rock-studded groove in the peat that a healthy woman could have leapt across, but someone had placed a broad stone across it for a bridge. She looked at it for a while and then reached into her sack. She took out a long piece of black material and blindfolded herself. Then she walked out across the stone, taking tiny steps with her arms flung out wide for balance. Halfway across, she fell onto her hands and knees and stayed there, panting for several minutes. Then she crawled forward again by inches. A few feet below, the peaty stream rattled happily over the stones. The sky glinted. It was a sky with blue patches and bits of cloud, but it had a strange look, as though a picture painted on glass had been fractured, and then the shards reassembled wrongly. A drifting cloud disappeared against some invisible line and began to emerge in another part of the sky altogether. Things were not what they seemed, but then, as Granny always said, they never were. Agnes practically had to pull Oates into Nanny Ogg's house, which was in fact so far away from the concept of a witch's cottage that it, as it were, approached it from the other side. It tended towards jolly clashing colours rather than black, and smelled of polish. There were no skulls or strange candles, apart from the pink novelty one that Nanny had once bought in Ankh-Morpork and only brought out to show to guests with the right sense of humour. There were lots of tables, mainly in order to display the vast number of drawings and iconographs of the huge Og clan. At first sight, these looked randomly placed until you worked out the code. In reality, pictures were advanced or retarded around the room as various family members temporarily fell in or out of favour, and anyone ending up on the small wobbly table near the cat's bowl had some serious spadework to do.
What made it worse was that you could fall down the pecking order not because you'd done something bad, but because everyone else had done something better. This was why what space wasn't taken up with family pictures was occupied by ornaments, because no Og who travelled more than 10 miles from Ankh-Morpork would dream of returning without a present. The Ogs loved Nanny Og, and, well, there were even worse places than the wobbly table. A distant cousin had once ended up in the hall. Many of the ornaments were cheapjack stuff brought from fairs, but Nanny Og never minded, provided they were colourful and shiny. So there were a lot of cross-eyed dogs, pink shepherdesses, and mugs with badly spelled slogans like "To the World's Best Mum" and "We Luove Our Nanny." A huge gilded China beer stein that played "Ich bin ein Ratterseedschwein" from the Student Horse was locked in a glass-fronted cabinet as a treasure too great for common display, and had earned Sherl Og's picture a permanent place on the dresser. Nanny Og had already cleared a space on the table for the green ball. She looked up sharply when Agnes entered.
"You were a long time. Been dallying," she said in an armour-piercing voice.
"Nanny, Granny would have said that," said Agnes reproachfully. Nanny shivered.
"You're right, girl," she said. "Let's find her quickly, eh? I'm too cheerful to be a crone."
"There's odd creatures everywhere," said Agnes. "There's loads of centaurs. We had to dive into the ditch."
"Ah, I did notice you'd got grass and leaves on your dress," said Nanny, "but I was too polite to mention it."
"Where are they all coming from?"
"Down out of the mountains, I suppose. Why did you bring Soapy Sam back with you?"
"Because he's covered in mud, Nanny," said Agnes sharply, "and I said he could have a wash down here."
Is this really a witch's cottage?"
said Oates, staring at the assembled ranks of augury.
"Oh, dear," said Nanny.
"Pastor Melchio said they are sinks of depravity and sexual excess."
The young man took a nervous step backwards, knocking against a small table and causing a blue clockwork ballerina to begin a jerky pirouette to the tune of 3 blind mice.
"Well, we've got a sink, all right," said Nanny. "What's your best offer?"
"I suppose we should be grateful that was a Nanny Og comment," said Agnes. "Don't wind him up, Nanny. It's been a busy morning."
"Which way's the, pump?"
said Oates. Agnes pointed. He hurried out, gratefully.
"Wetter than a thunderstorm sandwich," said Nanny, shaking her head.
"Granny was seen up above the long lake," said Agnes, sitting down at the table. Nanny looked up sharply.
"On that bit of moor?" she said.
"Yes, that's bad. That's gnarly country up there."
"Gnarly? All scrunched up?"
"What? I've been up there. It's just heather and gorse, and there's a few old caves at the end of the valley."
"Oh, really? Looked up at the clouds, did you? Oh, well, let's have a go."
When Oates came back, scrubbed and shining, they were arguing. They looked rather embarrassed when they saw him.
"I said it'd need 3 of us, said Nanny, pushing the glass ball aside, "especially if she's up there. Gnarly ground plays merry hell with scrying. We just ain't got the power."
"I don't want to go back to the castle.
Magrat's good at this sort of thing."
"She's got a little baby to look after, Nanny."
"Yeah, in a castle full of vampires. Think about that. No knowing when they'll get hungry again. Better for them both to be out of it."
"But
you get her out now. I'd come myself, but you said I'd just sit there grinning."
Agnes suddenly pointed a finger at Oates.
"You."
Me? He quavered.
"You said you could see there were vampires, didn't you?"
"I did."
"You did?"
"That's right. I did.
And?"
"You didn't find your mind becoming all pink and happy?"
"I don't think my mind has ever been pink and happy," said Oates.
"So why didn't they get through to you?"
Oates smiled uneasily and fished in his jacket. "I am protected by the hand of Om," he said.
Nanny inspected the pendant. It showed a figure trussed across the back of a turtle.
"You say," she said. "That's a good wheeze, then."
"Just as Om, reached out his hand to save the prophet Brutha from the torture, so will he spread his wings over me in my time of trial,"
said Oates. But he sounded as though he was trying to reassure himself rather than Nanny. He went on.
"I've got a pamphlet if you would like to know more."
And this time the tone was much more positive. as if the existence of Om was a little uncertain, whereas the existence of pamphlets was obvious to any open-minded, rational-thinking person.
"Don't!"
said Nanny. She let the medallion go.
"Well, Brother Purdori never needed any magic jewellery for fighting off people, that's all I can say."
"No, he just used to breathe alcohol all over them," said Agnes. "Well, you're coming with me, Mr. Oates. I'm not facing Prince Slime again alone, and you can shut up."
I didn't say anything. I didn't mean you. I meant...
Look, you said you've studied vampires, didn't you? What's good for vampires?
Oates thought for a minute.
A nice dry coffin, plenty of fresh blood, overcast skies. His voice trailed off when he saw her expression.
Ah, well, it depends exactly where they're from, I remember. Uberwald is a very big place. Cutting off the head and staking them in the heart is generally efficacious.
But that works on everyone, said Nanny.
In splints they die if you put a coin in their mouth and cut their head off.
Not like ordinary people, then, said Nanny, taking out a notebook.
In clots they die if you stick a lemon in their mouth.
Sounds more like it. After you've cut their head off.
I believe that in glitz, you have to fill their mouth with salt, hammer a carrot into both ears, and then cut off their head.
I can see it must have been fun finding that out.
And in the Valley of the they believe it's best to cut off the head and boil it in vinegar.
You're going to need someone to carry all this stuff, Agnes, said Nanny Ogg.
But in Kashinkari, they say you should cut off their toes and drive a nail through their neck.
And cut their head off?
Apparently, you don't have to.
Toes is easy, said Nanny. Old Windrow over in Badass cut off two of his with a spade and he weren't even trying.
And then, of course, you can defeat them by stealing their left sock, said Oates.
Sorry, said Agnes. I think I misheard you there.
They're pathologically meticulous, you see. Some of the gypsy tribes in Borogravia say that if you steal their sock and hide it somewhere, they'll spend the rest of eternity looking for it. They can't abide things to be out of place or missing.
I wouldn't have put this down as a very widespread belief, said Nanny.
Oh, they say in some villages that you can even slow them down by throwing poppy seed at them, said Oates. Then they'll have a terrible urge to count every seed. Vampires are very anal retentive, you see.
I shouldn't like meeting one that was the opposite, said Nanny.
Yes, well, I don't think we're going to have time to ask the Count for his precise address, said Agnes quickly. We're going to go in, fetch Magret, and get back here, all right? Why are you such a vampire expert, Oates?
I told you I studied this sort of thing at college. We have to know the enemy if we're to combat evil forces. Vampires, demons, witches... He stopped.
Do go on, said Nanny Ogg, as sweet as arsenic.
But with witches, I'm just supposed to show them the error of their ways.
Oates coughed nervously.
That's something to look forward to, then, said Nanny. What with me not having my fireproof corsets on. Off you go, then, all three of you.
"There's three of us," said Oates.
Agnes felt her left arm tremble. Against every effort of will, her wrist bent, her palm curled up, and she felt two fingers straining to unfold. Only Nanny Ogg noticed.
"Like having your own chaperone all the time, ain't it?" she said.
"What was she talking about?" said Oates as they headed for the castle.
"Her mind's wandering," said Agnes loudly.
Thank you.